Hi, my name is Dylan Bennion, and you're listening to another episode of the Cognition & Co podcast, Psychology in South Africa. On today's episode, we'll be talking to clinical psychologist Lauren Davis. You'll remember Lauren's name from the Cognition & Conversation event we hosted back in March earlier this year. At our conference, Lauren spoke about COVID-19 and the lockdown, how it pertains to our mental health. Since March, so much has changed, so we've asked Lauren to come on our podcast and discuss what we've seen since then. Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So last time Lauren and I hung out, it was during the Cognition & Co conference. And, you know, that was about a week or two into this whole COVID pandemic that's blown up around the world. And I think there's so much more that we know about it now and so much more to be said. I think at the time there was only 2 deaths from COVID in South Africa. And I think that number's increased exponentially. So we thought we'd ask you back on here just to chat a little bit more about COVID and mental health during this lockdown and what we've seen and what we can maybe expect to see.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Of course.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose, as you say, when we last spoke, it was kind of week 2 of lockdown, and we knew about this thing of a pandemic. We knew that it had had dire impacts at other places in the world, but it almost felt like something quite abstract for us in South Africa. Mm. And I think, what is it, over 100 days later, it's very real. And I think, you know, everybody probably knows somebody who's COVID positive and possibly has even died from it. And I think the reality is up close and personal, and I think we can't avoid it. So I think we're noticing, obviously, I think when we spoke last, there was maybe still a lot of denial. I think people were like, oh, it's not so serious, or it's just like a flu, or we're fine in South Africa. And I think less people are in denial, and I think more people are experiencing the reality of it, and I've actually called it a collective trauma. I think we're as a globe dealing with the trauma. So we've called it pandemic, we've called it crisis, but it's actually a trauma. And I think if we look back into kind of trauma literature, the way we define a trauma is that it's unpredictable, it comes with no warning, and we have no control over it. And so if you think about COVID, it kind of meets all those criteria. So I think we're kind of sitting in this unpredictability, this prolonged uncertainty, lots of loss and grief, not just loss of, obviously there's loss of life, loss of jobs. So those are the tangible losses. But I think there's a lot of intangible losses of, you know, the way life used to be. You know, one of my colleagues was just lamenting the other day how she just misses being able to hug people when you greet them. Obviously not the clients, but, you know. Just being able to like the norm of hugging somebody, or just being able to, you know, run to the shops. But if you don't have a mask, you can't do that. And not being able to read people's faces. So I think there's lots of more ambiguous loss that maybe we're also not aware of. So I'm noticing a lot of anxiety and fear, together with a lot of sadness and loss. And I think also exhaustion. I think people are like, just hurtful.
Yeah, no, it's so true. I think, you know, so many people have been forced into, you know, especially these online environments, and people are tired of doing Zoom meetings now. You know, people are sick of it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I used to use the word when in doubt, zoom out. Like if you need it, if you're struggling, I always used to say zoom out to gain some perspective, but I think zoom out has taken on a different connotation.
A very literal meaning now.
Yeah, I think people are literally zoomed out. And I think the you know, there is a whole kind of field that's emerging called Zoom fatigue. And it's a real concept of being exhausted, because it requires a different way of being when we're engaging across a screen. So we're all reduced, if we're lucky to have camera on, we're reduced to a 2-dimensional head and shoulders, which impacts our ability to read body language. We're having to focus in a different way. You know, we're much more up close and personal, you know, with eye contact, staring right at each other.
Yeah.
So it is incredibly draining. And then also, I think what people are saying, they're zoomed out because they're working via online and socializing via online. So there's mm-hmm. a already there's very little boundary between work and home because we were working from home. But then it gets even more blurred because you finish work and then you want to do a Zoom call with your family. And so you're using the same medium, which is creating a lot of exhaustion.
Yeah, I think just creating a home environment that, you know, is also a work environment is very sort of like weird on your body almost, you know, because my therapist always told me that if I was doing work from home, I need to set aside like a room or something to do it so that my whole home doesn't become a work environment. So that when I walk in there, maybe I'm getting the anxiety of like the work that I've got to carry. And I think a lot of people are struggling with that where, you know, they're almost like working from bed, you know, sometimes. And then that's also the place where you're supposed to sleep. So you climb into bed at night and you're like, all of a sudden you're wired and it's like almost like conditioning, you know, you climb into bed and you're like, well, I'm supposed to work now. You know, it's a confusing time. I think like you explained it very well in the conference, you know, when you spoke about the fact that we're living in VUCA times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we still have a lot of VUCA aspects that are happening there. Do you want to expand on that? And just anyone that wasn't there that doesn't know what VUCA is, go into that a bit.
Yeah, totally. So I think it was about 10 or 15 years ago that the term VUCA started being used in terms of the times we were living in. And I think if you think about life BC, before COVID, it was incredibly VUCA then as well. So VUCA stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And I think, you know, life has been like that for many years on every front, socially, economically, environmentally, on the tech space, in the legal space. You know, there's no aspect of our lives that wasn't constantly changing and becoming more and more uncertain and incredibly complex. So that was before COVID hit the globe. And I think we're now living in VUCA times on steroids, because if I just think in South Africa, like we said, we spoke, I think it was beginning of April or end of March.
End of March, yeah.
End of March. And I mean, if we just think about what's happened since then, how our immediate world has changed and then on the global stage. So, and now things are changing almost weekly. You know, it's so difficult to predict.
Yeah.
So we are living in this time. I think we can't change it. I think the challenge has been the mechanisms we've used to cope with VUCA times or to try and manage VUCA times have been quite ineffective, because I think we've been trying to control things more, put more things in control, have more certainty. So there's been, and this is also, again, before COVID, and I think it's just become even more pronounced now. It's more controlling. We're trying to be more urgent. So there's a sense of like, if we just go fast,
we'll get through it.
Yeah. Well, we'll either get through it or it won't catch us. So yeah. It's both. Exactly. So let's just keep going and speed up. And let's try and predict. Let's try and create certainty, because then we can feel safe. You know, I think if you watch any virologist or economist in all spheres, everybody's trying to predict how this thing is going to go. I mean, I've seen every single letter of the alphabet on a graph in terms of, is it a Y curve? Is it a W curve? Is it a whatever curve to try and see how this thing is going to end? And that's just us trying to have some kind of control and certainty. And so I've come up with this acronym. It's easier if you see it, but if you think about control, urgency, and certainty, it, we've been doing things in a very cuck kind of a way. So CUC. I know that's not how you spell cuck, but we can say it. And it hasn't been effective. It's been really cuck, because, and it's still not proving to be effective, because we can't outrun this thing. Trying to control it and predict it is not going to help us through, especially from a mental health perspective. And so part of, you know, the work that I've been doing, and I think the work we need to do in the mental health space, is help people find more effective strategies to navigate through these VUCA times where being cuck cannot work anymore.
Yeah. Just before this, Laura and I were talking about the don't be cuck, be lacquer. And I sat last night and decided that I was going to try and make an acronym for lacquer so that we could make this specifically South African. So my lacquer isn't spelt the same as Afrikaans lacquer, but I think it's a good idea to be laid back. It's a good idea to be empirical, collectivist, kind-hearted and adaptable. And I think each of those things is very much, I think, what we should be doing at the moment. Like in our conference that we hosted with Lauren, you know, she brought something to my attention that I was working my butt off to do 10,000 things every day so that I felt like I was getting somewhere during lockdown, you know, during this pandemic. And she was like, if you don't feel like doing anything, don't do anything. And I was like, oh, the weight of the world is all of a sudden lifted off my shoulders, you know? So I think being laid back is something that's super important. And you also mentioned, you know, the empirical side of things is that, like, stay away from fake news. You know, there's so much fake news out there that's causing as big of a problem as what COVID's doing. You know, every day, you know, somebody's sharing a WhatsApp chain letter that says, you know, if you don't like do the following 8 things, you know, you're definitely gonna get out of here, man. Like, I want to see peer-reviewed articles before you bring up that nonsense. Collectivist, I think that's something that I think South Africa is just naturally good at as well, because, you know, wearing a mask is a slight inconvenience to you, but you're potentially saving hundreds and thousands of people. If you look at how these things spread, if you catch it and you go to a funeral of 50 people and they go to a funeral of 50, next thing, half the continent has it, you know. Kind-hearted, I think that speaks for itself. And adaptable, I think, if anything as well, we've shown a bit of resilience in terms of how we can be adaptable. And, you know, it's just I guess moving onto online platforms for me has been something where I had to adapt. I was quite keen to present in front of, you know, the 80 students for the conference. And next thing I'm told, listen, you can't have a room with more than 2 people in it. And all of a sudden I had to adapt. So I think, don't be cuck, guys, be lacquer.
I love that. I think we've coined a whole new way of being. And I think exactly, I think those qualities or ways of being in the world are, it's as simple as that, you know, and I always say the way we need to be in general, but especially during a crisis, is common sense. It's just not common practice. And I think partly, you know, we've all gone into the survivalist mode. We've all kind of only worried about protecting ourselves and our clan. And that makes us almost, yeah, lose our common sense. I saw a post the other day where they said we're suffering from a severe lack of a severe deficiency of common sense at the moment. And I think it's, you know, if we could just, yes, everybody needs to be taking vitamin C and zinc, but if we could just give everybody a dose of common sense as well, that would be really, really useful.
I think so. We won't inject any bleach either. Thank you very much. No. But then again, common sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that thing where you say about fake news, I think it's fake news, but I think it's all news and all social media. I think we really need to limit how, because I think we're also having an infodemic at the moment. There is so much out there. I mean, I've found I'm less obsessing about reading stuff about infection rates and death rates and recovery rates. So I'm not I'm not overrunning my mind with those facts, but I'm reading everything I can on mental health and how to fortify ourselves during this time and how, you know, what is the trauma response and how, you know, how do we plan for the mental health thing? So I've gone down a different track, but I also realized a couple of weeks ago it was overwhelming and there's so much stuff out there. So it's also being boundaried around that, like half an hour max on reading social media. And then giving your brain a break. Because again, you know, from a brain perspective, we're not operating with our full cognitive capability at the moment. Because we're in survival mode, that primitive part of our brain is dominant. It's always dominant, but it's more dominant at the moment because all it's worried about is, am I safe or not? You know, where it's just looking for threat detection. And with everything that's going on, it has to be switched on more than usual because there is a danger out there. And so that means that our cognitive capability is already limited. So we're not thinking as well as we would out of pandemic times. You know, we don't have necessarily all the prefrontal cortical functions available to us as readily. So the main thing the prefrontal cortex does is emotional regulation. And it's not there as much. One of my HR colleagues said she found, and she works at, I mean, she's an HR director. She said she finds that 80% of her time at the moment is helping people emotionally regulate. Her colleagues, her like peer, her senior peers, have helping them just like almost put their lid back on and think things through, because there's such a heightened emotional panic, anxiety, fear response that that logical, analytical capability is so diminished at the moment. And I think it's about being aware of that. And that's where the kind-hearted piece I just love is kind-hearted to each other, definitely, but also to ourselves. So when you said, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, you were like putting this pressure on yourself to do 50 million things and, you know, write that paper you wanted to write and finish that book and work on your body. And, you know, and there were some posts that were coming out that were infuriating me, because they were saying, if you don't get done the thing you wanted to get done during this time, well, then time wasn't an issue. Then it's your motivation or your discipline. And it's just so wrong, that, because just the tasks of daily living during a pandemic take so much more effort and energy. So if all you do is get through the day, get out of bed in the morning, what you need to do and feed yourself, feed your family, and maybe have a shower, like, you're proper winning. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so this productivity porn and this like competitiveness of people posting and kind of who's doing what and who's achieving, it's actually very unhealthy and unhelpful. So the kind-heartedness is definitely to each other, but also just being compassionate to ourselves and saying what you can do is what you can do, and we can't compare.
No, for sure. I gave up on the summer body aspect early into lockdown, just before I bought one of those pull-up bars, and now it's a towel rack. So, and I'm okay with that now after watching you talk the first time. Lauren, you speak about it, this up and downness of it. You speak about a COVID coaster, you know, of fear and anxiety and everything that's going on. And I think that's so apt as well. You know, like we spoke earlier a little bit about the fact that this thing has now gone completely global, and there's no spaces to hide. You know, you're not going to go anywhere where you're going to, you know, be free of COVID. You know, it's all around you constantly. And I think that's forcing the issue there of that urgency and that mindset of like, I just got to get things done, you know? And it's almost sad. I posted a post right in the beginning when COVID said like the top 10 things you can do, you know? And looking back, I wish that we'd had a conversation first, and I'd been like, the top one thing you can do is just be yourself. But I did encourage students to apply for masters, which is, I think, not a terrible thing. So shame. A whole bunch of them are closing today. And I know I've got a bunch of stressed students in the WhatsApp group. So guys, if you are applying today, and it is the last day for a lot of the universities, good luck. We're thinking of you. Yeah, shame. Yeah, I guess building resilience is also a thing that we've been focused on a lot. You know, I think nothing could have really prepared us for this whole thing. What would be your sort of ideas and tips towards sort of like fortifying the mind?
Yeah, I think just a point on the COVID coaster, and that's not my word. Somebody raised that early on, and I loved it, because I think we do cycle through all the emotions. Or we are cycling through it. And I think, you know, within one day, I've noticed in myself and my clients, my family, you know, we can feel absolute dread and panic, and then totally sad and just a feeling of loss, and then some hope and optimism, because, you know, we have that as well. And so I suppose for me, from a mental health perspective, it's so important just to normalize it, that all the feelings are normal. And if somebody's feeling optimistic and you're not, there's not something wrong with you. It's just not your moment to feel optimistic. And if somebody's filled with dread and panic, it's not about judging them, because that's where they're at. And so I think we, you know, one of the key ways of being lacquer, I love that, is to just allow whatever you're feeling to be there, and to just notice it and just allow it, because you can't, I think it was Freud that said, unexpressed emotions will come out in uglier ways. So if we're going to suppress our emotions because we think they're not, you know, they're not good, or we shouldn't feel that way, it's just going to impact you further down the line. So just noticing what you're feeling and just sitting with it. And a lot of the feelings we have are really awful at the moment. And we can't escape it. There's nowhere where we can go where it's not where it's not present. Yeah, so in terms of resilience, one of the things that, you know, everybody's using this analogy of like, guys, we're in a marathon. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And I think even our president used it when he spoke the last time. And whilst I really appreciate the sentiment behind that analogy, because it does help us prepare our minds for a long haul, it's actually really cuck, because, but proper cuck, because firstly, I didn't choose to run this marathon. Yeah. And so for that to help me build resilience, choice is such an important piece. I didn't choose to run this marathon. I haven't trained for it. And I don't know that it's going to end after 42 kilometers. Ooh, you know, yeah. So it's actually a really poor analogy, because it's not helping. However, what I have been saying to people is, okay, so if we're going to acknowledge we're in a marathon, right? So this is a long haul. You didn't choose it. So already we're kind of one step back in terms of resilience stuff. But if we go to the trauma literature, you know, trauma, we never choose a trauma. So we have to say, okay, I didn't choose to be here, but I have to accept that I'm here now. So, okay, I'm in this marathon. Right. I didn't choose it, but I'm in it. I haven't trained for it, so I'm unfit, but I'm in it. So I better start training while I'm running. And I don't know when it's going to end. So I have to really pace myself. And I think that's, you know, that's what I've, that in terms of the resilience stuff, it's about really slowing down, taking lots of rest. You know, at the beginning of this, my one colleague kept writing stuff and posting stuff, and in all of our supervision groups, he was just saying, guys, it's an ice age, you know, it's not just a storm, like pace yourselves, because we were all out the starting blocks, like wanting to help and put this out and do this and get involved in this. And our clients in the, you know, were also doing all of that. And he kept saying, guys, it's not going to be over for a long time. Pace yourself. And now we've just seen our colleagues and clients, they're just burning out because they kind of came out of the starting blocks too quickly. And so I think it's taking lots of breaks. It's being kind to yourself, breathing a lot. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that says, you know, to fortify yourself and to build resilience, you must eat healthy, you must exercise, you must have good sleep, and you must stick to a routine. And those things are wonderful. But during a crisis or pandemic like this, I think most people can't do that. And then all we do, we feel guilty because we're not doing that. So again, like, throw that out the window. Obviously, if you can eat healthily, do it. It won't be a bad thing. If you can exercise, do it. But if you can't find the time, the not even the time, it's not a time thing. If you can't find the motivation to do it, then just don't. You know, just do. And it's constantly checking in with yourself of what's working for me now. What do I need now to recharge? What do I need right now to take care of my emotional needs? What do I need right now? And what I need today might be different to what I need tomorrow. So often people have said, I don't understand. I found the perfect kind of way to cope last week, but then I've had such a terrible this week, and those things aren't working. Well, that's because even as humans, we are VUCA, right? We're changing all the time. So it's really being, it's about awareness and just being in tune with what you need. I keep saying there's no right way to pandemic. So many, many people will tell you how to do this thing. There isn't. And it's just finding what works for you and what works for your family. If it's not working for you, then change it. Find something different.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, if we have to use the metaphor of, you know, doing a marathon, I came out way too hot. You know, I'm running it like, you know, like 3.5 minutes a K, and I burnt out pretty quickly. But if anything, guys, drink a bit of water, grab a banana from time to time. But no, it's so true what you say. I found it in myself. Some weeks, some days, you know, it'll cycle. Like I'll be super motivated. I'll get stuff done. I'll send the emails I need to. I'll arrange the podcasts I have to. And other days, I'll sit and play Fortnite with my cousin online, and, you know, do nothing. But at the same time, both days I still go to bed with this like slightly grumpy feeling, you know, like there is no right way. And like, I've tried 100 things every day so far, and I can't really seem to find the perfect thing. And I don't think there is a perfect sort of routine to do. So if it means throwing a routine out the window, that's also fine. Just focus on just your current state of being and just getting through.
And I think that point of yours is, if you're expecting yourself to not feel some level of dread, anxiety, sadness, frustration, then you're having an unrealistic expectation because of what's going on. The macro environment we sit in is really scary. So to have an expectation that you should feel good also just creates more unhappiness, really, because we actually should feel pretty panicked at some stage, or just a low level of things are not great right now, you know, and that's more realistic, you know. And so just some of the other like key strategies, I suppose, other than, you know, not kind of really, these are more kind of mental strategies, I guess, but it is really important, I think, just to focus on what you can control, you know, circle of concern, circle of influence. And I think we love spending time on the things we can't control and kind of getting irate by who's doing what and, you know, what's going on in the media and what government is doing what, and, you know, what people are doing in other countries. And I'm not saying that those things aren't concerning, and of course they concern and impact us. It's just that we can't change them. So to focus on that really leaks our energy. Mm. So it's about saying, focusing on what you can focus on, you know, which is giving yourself the space to feel what you need to feel, wearing your mask, washing your hands, you know, social distancing, like there are things that you can do, and focusing on that, which is really important. And I think within that, something that I read an article by Esther Perel, which was so powerful, because she said, you know, at the moment we're all focused on this post-COVID world, AC, you know, after COVID, everybody's just looking at what's the post-COVID world going to be like. And that's part of our cuck way of being, is we're now trying to control and try and predict. And she said, yes, that's partly important, but we can't predict it. So it's actually not really the best use of our energy.
Yeah.
She suggested looking back and saying, where in your life have you had a challenge? Have you had a struggle? Where have you maybe experienced trauma? And how did you navigate that? And what were the resources you used? So almost reminding yourself of your own resilience, because we've all, you know, it's not our first rodeo in life as being human, and being human is fraught with challenges and upsets and difficult times. So it's even if you haven't had a major trauma, but just going back and saying, well, okay, so I've navigated through some tough times before. And what were the resources? What are the things that worked then? What did I learn? So really building on our own inner resources and kind of bringing those to the present moment, as opposed to looking to an unpredictable, uncertain future and trying to put control in there when we have no control over it. So I think that's a really important one. And then the last one that a colleague of mine raised, and I loved it, was he just said, we're so focused on the physical infection rate, but also watch out for the emotional infection rate. Let's minimize the emotional, let's flatten the emotional infection rate curve. So watch what you're spreading, watch what you are exposing yourself to. And if everybody just takes responsibility for their own emotions, then maybe we're not going to be infecting each other with that as things progress.
Yeah, that's so important. You know, like they said that I see all the time that there's always posts about, you know, the next pandemic is going to be the mental health one. And I think if we can start to sit with this awkwardness and this uncomfortable feeling that we've got from COVID now, we can hopefully flatten that curve before it even starts. You know, like we said earlier, we're all suffering from a little bit of burnout here. And like emotionally, things are tough, you know. Like I said, like I go to bed feeling just like a little bit anxious and grumpy almost every night, you know. And I think the people, I guess, that listen to this podcast will have some sort of understanding of psychology. But a lot of, I think, the general public that don't have like a massive psychological awareness, sitting with that uncomfortableness and just, you know, exploring what it is so important. You know, self-reflection and introspection are such key terms here that, you know, if you're a psych student, you know what they are, and you should have an understanding how to do it. But we almost need to create awareness of that. It's fine to sit in that uncomfortable feeling, no matter who you are, what you're doing, it's fine. You know, it's there for a reason. It's telling you that something's going on around you that your body and your mind is not that comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we can spread the reach of this and more people can listen and understand that whatever you're feeling, that's okay.
Mm. And maybe at that point, I suppose you raise a really important point, because we're not always aware of what we are feeling. You know, it's one thing to say, be aware of it and kind of just be okay in sitting with it. But as you say, some people don't even know what these feelings are. And that's so true. One of the things that I've started kind of making a inventory of is behaviors that people seem to be doing that are indicative of a feeling of anxiety or of loss. And I think when I've been sharing this with people, they found it quite useful, because they're like, oh yeah, I've been doing that. I didn't realize it's because I've been feeling anxious.
Sure.
So maybe I can just share some of those. It might be useful.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think a really common one, and I think people know this, but I'm just going to say it in case we don't always make the link, is disturbed sleep. So people are obviously struggling to sleep. And that's obviously because their mind is just so, either because of what you're saying, they're working or in their room or in their bedroom, and then they get into bed and the mind wants to go into work mode. But even if it's not that, I just think when we lie down and we're not busy, then the mind starts to tick and it's much harder to distract it.
Mm.
But I've also had people say, you know, people that could never sleep or always struggled with sleep are just sleeping so much more. And so that's also a way of, it's kind of, you know, when we're asleep, we don't have to think and we don't have to feel. So it is a way of kind of numbing. And then interestingly enough, I've been chatting to a few psychology colleagues of mine and the dreams people are having. So people are just having very active dream life or very nightmarish and anxiety-filled dreams. And I think there's nothing to do about it. It's just to notice that it's normal. But if you're having that, it could be a sign that you are feeling more anxious than you were aware of.
Mm.
The other one, which is a typical trauma response, is this exaggerated startle response. So people are very jumpy. And, you know, a lot of my clients have said, you know, I'll just be standing in the kitchen cooking and my child will walk in and just say, hey, mom. And I suddenly like jump and scream,
yeah.
You know, and that's just because we're so wired. We're so on at the moment. And then physical pains, headaches, stomach pains, a lot more stomach complaints. And that's, you know, we hold a lot of anxiety in our tummy. Short fuse. So really people getting frustrated and losing their cool a lot. The productivity thing is an interesting one, because I was thinking about, what is this about? What's driving this behavior? And actually, I think it can be, not always, but I think it could be a way to distract ourselves from feeling anxious. Because if I'm busy and if I'm feeling productive and if I feel like I've achieved something and I'm focusing my attention elsewhere, then I don't have to feel the anxiety.
Mm.
So what I'm saying to people is, don't, if the productivity thing's working for you and you're getting a lot done and it's feeling good, that's fine. But just look underneath, are you distracting yourself? So
sure.
If you can't still, then potentially there's that. Forgetfulness, which is interesting. People are finding they are so forgetful at the moment. And that's also so normal, because you're holding so many different parts. And as I said earlier, our cognitive capacity is not working so well at the best of times at the moment. So the forgetfulness is really common. And then this is more well known, but just numbing ourselves with eating, drinking, you know, watching for those kind of things. And then the binge watching of series. So this one I sit on the fence with, because I have actually prescribed it to some of my clients to say, for this weekend, you are going to find a good series. And you're just going to sit on the couch and just watch, just because that they are so anxious or so kind of stressed that they just need something to distract themselves.
Yeah.
So it's not all bad, but I think if you're finding you can't do anything else but watch Netflix, I'm doing an advertising promo here, but watch series, then just be aware. So I think it's quite useful to notice those kind of behaviors, just as a self-awareness piece. And then it's not about judging. For me, it's about, instead of judging, it's just about being curious and just being able to say, okay, I'm feeling this, you know, I've behaved in this way. Why am I feeling anxious? Obviously, I know I'm anxious about the whole thing, but why now? What's particularly making me anxious? And then just sitting with it. We can't get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't run away from it. It's literally everywhere. I think it's another thing that you raise here is that it's not it's not the new normal, actually. It's the new abnormal. I think that's beautiful. I think it really sums up what's going on at the moment and what we'll predictively see in the future as well. You know, it's never going to be normal again.
Yeah, that new normal really gets me going. And maybe I am a little bit more triggered than in usual times because of what's going on. But it just frustrates me for a number of reasons. I think we're, again, because of our cuck way of being in the world, we're trying to be cuck again. We're trying to control and create certainty too soon because we can't normalize this. But it does help in that cuck mindset. It helps if we can say, well, okay, this is the new normal, so we must just adapt and get on with it, right? But it's not healthy because it's not normal. It's not normal to, as we said earlier, do everything online. Yes, remote working, I think, will become more of the norm, but you will still have a choice to meet somebody face-to-face if you want to.
Yeah.
You'll probably still have a choice to go into an office and have a meeting if you want to. You'll still have a choice then to socialize, not online.
Yeah.
You know, so much will be left to our choice. And you won't have a global kind of deadly disease hanging over your head. So it's totally not normal. And I think by calling it normal, I think what we do is we risk creating a space for judgment. So people that aren't able to adjust to this new normal can very quickly get labeled as, oh, she's just change resistant, or, you know, she's not agile enough. You know, get on the bus, guys. This is the new normal. So I think we need to be very cautious because for people that are struggling, they could feel very alienated if they can't get on with this new normal.
Yes, dangerous thinking.
Yeah. And then the last piece I was thinking about, because I was reading a paper on psychosis the other day, and they were just describing, I'd never heard a psychotic breakdown or the delusions and hallucinations linked to psychosis. I'd never heard it described in such a beautiful way. So the guy was saying, because when you have a psychotic breakdown, the world is so chaotic and you're getting all this information, but you have no way of kind of fitting it together. So it's all these kind of random parts. So where the delusions and hallucinations come from is the mind trying to make some sense of this. And it comes out in a reality-based, nonsensical way. But for that person, you know, nobody ever really has a delusion or a hallucination that's really evil. Normally it's a grandiose, like I'm kind of, you know, God, or, you know, I'm Mahatma Gandhi or whatever. So, sorry, I'm kind of using a long explanation. But what I started thinking was, I think part of our need to say this is the new normal is a little bit of a psychotic response. Because at the moment, everything is so chaotic. It's so nonsensical. So in a way, we're having this collective psychotic breakdown at the moment. There's all these random parts that just don't match with our mental maps, with our known reality. And so this need to say it's a new normal is like a delusion to say, okay, well, if it's the new normal, then I have some kind of control over it. Then I know it makes sense, and now I can move forward. And I just think we have to be very cautious about it because it's just, I think we're rushing to believe that we know what's going on and that it's that we can create certainty and control right now. And I just don't think we can. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. The picture that is created in my mind, the whole aspect of psychosis, is like you've been trying to build a puzzle this whole time, but you've got frustrated. So instead of actually finishing the puzzle, you've just hammered all the pieces in. And now you've stepped back to look at this picture that you've created, and it's absolute shambles because you've hammered it together, you know, through urgency and frustration. And, you know, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing. Like, how's that going to predict anything? You know, when you look at this picture and, you know, the horse's head is, you know, where its feet should be. And, you know, so I think in this time, we need to sit it out and build that puzzle one piece at a time and just see where it gets us so that at the end, we can have some sort of picture to look at and look back on and look forward to, you know.
I love that. I think that's such a good analogy. Exactly. It's like we've got tired. We don't want to wait.
Yeah.
And I think the scary thing is you don't actually have the picture of what that puzzle is going to look like.
Exactly. Either. You're working without the box, you know, you're just putting together. And it's one of those puzzles where there's a lot of trees, you know, and you're just,
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I think what we also wanted to talk a little bit about was just the sort of role of psychologists in this time. You know, while this podcast, I guess, was kind of aimed at students originally, like it is called Psychology in South Africa. And I think there are a lot of professionals listening to this, you know, that can take a lot away from your perspective, Lauren. So what would you say to psychologists that are in the field at the moment that are dealing with these things and what you've noticed, I guess, from maybe your own practices?
I think what I want to start with actually, which I hadn't thought is what I wanted to start with, but listening to the question, I think, and maybe it's from my own experience in the last week, I think what we need to do as psychologists is take very good care of ourselves. And I know we always know that, but I think last week was the first time I had kind of quite a tough week, because I think, as we said, people are really kind of reaching the end of their tether, and I'm finding the emotional load much more than ever before, partly because we're also experiencing what our clients are experiencing. You know, we're also in this global pandemic ourselves. So a lot of what they're going through can be very similar to our experience. So to create that distance is harder. And so I just think, I think it's about, you know, even if you are in supervision and your own therapy, it might be about just creating a few more support structures and just reaching out and just being honest if you're not coping and taking a break. You know, I've found the need to take more breaks more often. So for example, I've decided to work a 4-day week because by Thursday I'm finished. I just can't do another day. So it's just, I think we have to be very careful because it is it's a different landscape. So I think that's the one thing. And reaching out for support, we're not so good at that. connecting in with colleagues, being real if you're not coping. So that's kind of for ourselves, just to make sure that as the vessel for support for others, we're taking care of ourselves. And then I think I'm finding that most of my work is just about normalizing people's reactions and responses and experiences, and just helping them understand exactly what we've spoken about today, that this is a global crisis, it's a trauma. And so whatever they're going through is a normal experience, and just helping them to feel a little bit normal in the abnormal, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then what I've found is, because I've felt quite helpless, you know, I feel like it's a lot of grief counseling in a way. It's a lot of grief and loss work that I'm doing, not directly, but it feels like the same feeling sitting in the kind of therapist seat. And I think, you know, that space has, I've always felt quite helpless, because you can't do anything to take away somebody's grief. You can just be there with them and let them cry and let them vent and just listen. And I'm finding that that is kind of the best space I can offer, is just the space where, because a lot of my clients are feeling like they can't burden other people in their family with what's going on for them because they're also burdened. So just giving them the space where they can kind of share what's on their heart and on their mind in a non-judgmental space. I think that's been, you know, I found that to be incredibly useful. And then with that, and helping them to be lekker to themselves. So the kind stuff. So a lot of just saying, just stop doing too much. Or for a few people, I've actually had to say, take rest. You're going to take leave next week. No, I can't take leave. I've got, so just helping them through some very practical, okay, well, when can you take leave? And you know, so it's bringing back some of that common sense stuff that I'm also finding in some way I have been a little bit more directive with my clients and helping them just, it's more like, trauma work in a way of like, how are you going to just take care of yourself? And then my last thought, which is maybe a little bit controversial, but I think as psychologists, we're very good at the reactive thing. So we're very good at being in our offices and waiting for people to contact us when they need help. And then we're always very ready to support them and get them back to a level of health. I'm wondering if part of our role during this and with the mental health tsunami that's here or on its way is how do we be more proactive in using our skills more upfront? So exactly like you're saying, doing a podcast like this and speaking about mental health, I've been asked for a couple of corporate clients to run some workshops on helping people look after their mental health. So speaking about the stuff upfront and helping people fortify and build resilience before they get sick and have to come land up for individual therapy. So I'm thinking that there's a big role we have to play right now in using our skills. And then the other thought I had was we're asking people for major behavior change, wear masks, social distance, sanitize, and especially now when people are hurtful because they've been doing this for 100 days. We are experts in behavior change. That's our field. So how do we, I mean, I don't know, but how do we help on a more national level to say, guys, wearing masks is important, sanitizing, like shifting that behavior, because we're not seeing enough of that behavior shift at the moment. So what's our role in that?
Going back a little bit, you know, when you spoke about the fact that what you're doing now feels like grief counseling, I think like that's so difficult in a time when, you know, usually when somebody's grieving, it's because they've had a loss, and like slowly over time that starts to diminish. They start to, you know, get back on track and stuff. But with COVID being a symbolic loss, it's just constant, you know, so you every session you basically reopening the scab, and you know it feels like the loss happened yesterday, and then next session yesterday, and the next session yesterday. I wrote a paper recently on symbolic loss and grieving, and one of the things that I found was this beautiful metaphor. It doesn't really apply here, but hopefully people, I don't know, we'll see, we'll take something from it. But basically, they said that grief is like this box, okay? And inside the box is a button. And every time that button's pushed by what we get to next, you know, it inflicts like a pain response of grieving. So now inside that box now, okay, is this ball. And this ball is inflated completely to like, you know, fill up the space. And especially right in the beginning, it's constantly pushing that button and inflicting that pain response. So what happens is over time then, you know, the ball is actually like a metaphor for your thoughts. So every time, you know, so this ball starts to shrink a little bit over time, but then it starts to bounce around the box. So every time you have a thought, it's moving around this box and bouncing, and it has the ability to hit that button, you know, and inflict that pain response. So slowly over time, that ball gets smaller to a point where it's not going to hit the button every single time and inflict that pain response, which I think is really nice. The ball's always going to be there and the button's always going to be there. And it could be 10 years down the line and a thought hits that button and you have that same pain response. But now we're sitting with COVID where that ball is really not getting any smaller very quickly. And it's, you know, it's causing those pain responses in whatever response it's making, whether it's pain or anxiety or depression or whatever it's doing, but it's there and it's not really going away. So I don't have practical experience in this, but counseling somebody with like a constant feeling of loss, I think is difficult.
I love that analogy. I think it's so powerful and so apt to this time, because that ball isn't going, you know, you're constantly confronted with it. And at the same time, I think there are moments where we're not. And so I suppose what I'm just thinking practically, so it is about helping people see what they still have and helping them be reminded. So it's like, yes, there's lots of loss. And you can choose to focus only on the loss, or you can allow yourself that sense of loss and look at what you still have. So it's bringing yourself back to, you know, just some practical things of like, I'm grateful that I'm still healthy, or, you know, my family, I still have my family around me, or I still have my job, or I still have a house, you know. So it sounds so, you know, even as I'm saying it, it sounds so like minimal compared to the pain of the loss, but it is about, because what this pandemic can do is just make everything take over. So it seems so big, and it, like that the pandemic is pervaded through every part of our life. And I suppose it is to remember that, yes, there's lots of loss, and there's also some stuff you haven't lost. So what haven't you lost? And then also I'm having some conversations with clients that are able to hold this paradox of I've lost a lot, and actually it's weird because I've gained some things. And so there are some things that I've loved about this time being with my family more, even though they drive me mad. I want to kill them. And I've enjoyed the time. So I think a lot about what this is asking us is, think we need to live in a not either or, but a both and space. So I'm feeling quite anxious and panicked and quite excited about some of the opportunities and possibilities. So it's just reminding us of what we do have, because you're so right. Like, the loss we know how to help people through, or ourselves, is a finite event.
Yeah.
And it ends, and then you can mourn the loss of it. So we're still losing it and mourning it at the same time.
Yeah. I feel like during this lockdown, I have been losing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're not, if you take it back to the ball in the box, like metaphor, I think, you know, there's, you're never going to really adjust the behavioral aspects that come from, you know, pushing that button, you know, but I think we can link a positive cognitive paradigm onto that, you know, so that when you do have that feeling of, this is what I've lost, like, you know, I'm struggling with this, then tie it back to something that you can think of positive, and try and almost like condition yourself so that when you do feel that, it not only like, I don't know, can hopefully like invigorate as well and look for the positives of things. I think that would be a healthy sort of coping mechanism to that if needed.
Yeah. And I think it is very important just to allow yourself to sit in that loss. And we hate that feeling. Nobody likes it. But just allow yourself. A lot of my clients have said, I'm just feeling sad. And I say, well, just feel sad and just cry. You know, just, it's so important to sit with it and not distract ourselves away from it.
I think for the therapists that are out there as well, like, just having an understanding of the different types of grief that are out there, you know, the paper that I wrote on, it kind of stepped away from like the Kubler-Ross, you know, stages of grieving, and looked more at the fact that, you know, some people grieve intuitively, which is characterized by like a very emotional sort of outburst, but other people grieve instrumentally, which is very like, you know, it's very active, and it almost like commemorates the loss that you've had, you know. So there are some people that are out there that are super productive at the moment, but that's just the way that they grieve, and that's okay. If you're sitting on the other end of the spectrum and you know, are crying, or you are having a tough time and you are sitting there intuitively, that's also okay. That's identified patterns of grief, you know? So there's no right way to grieve, you know, but there are different ways that different people grieve. So we need to be aware of those things.
Mm. And I think what you raise, I think a key thing is accepting what's going on for you, like we've said before, and then reaching out for help, whether you're a therapist or not. It is, you know, grief is being triggered. So in a lot of my clients, they're grieving the current, but then previous losses are now being triggered again. So that ball is bouncing on that button, and it's not this loss. It's all other losses are unpacking. And I think as therapists, it's touching our losses as well. So I think reaching out for help is also so important. And I just wanted to mention that too. Lifeline and SADAG, I have been, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, they've always been amazing resources. But during this time, they have been so active and so proactive, and not only offering one-on-one counseling, but also lots of Facebook Live group sessions and talks. So I just really want to encourage people, even if you are a therapist, to just connect into some of that stuff, because I think they're providing a wonderful resource for, you know, for the general population. But I think as therapists, I've learned quite a bit being on some of their Facebook Live groups and things.
100%, you know, and I think with everything that's happening with the economic factors in this country at the moment, not everybody has the money to go see a therapist, you know. If you look at some of the communities and stuff, there's not that much money for that. And SADAG does provide a free resource for anybody that is really struggling. And, you know, they've got trained counselors on call, toll free, for anybody that needs. So if you are struggling with anything, especially maybe even listening to a little bit of what we've been saying, if it's triggered anything, make sure that you reach out. I'll include SADAG's website details and phone number at the end of this podcast.
Right.
Lauren, I think that's everything. I mean, we could probably talk for hours and hours on all of this. And as we saw before the little podcast started, we just kind of went off on 100 different tangents. But thank you so much for giving your insights here and really expanding on what you had said in the conference that you did with us early in the year. And I think it's very important for us to see where we've come from, not for predictive, you know, future understanding of what's happening here, just to see how much we've come through and how strong we actually are.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And it's been so great to chat. I've learned a lot from you and I love your analogies. I'd love to just end. There's this quote, somebody posted it on some social media and I've been using it in a lot of my workshops, and I'd love to just read it out if that's okay, because I think it kind of sums up what we've been talking about.
Of course.
So it starts with saying, are you going to learn any new skills during the pandemic? And then the answer is, I already am. I'm learning how to cope with the pandemic, how to get through the day, knowing everyone I love is sad and scared, and how to read the news and still go on. And it is enough. I don't have to come out of this with new skills, new projects, or new accomplishments. What matters is that I come out of this.
Oh,
and I just love that.
That's beautiful.
You know, it's kind of, I'm learning how to be a human during a pandemic, and that's powerful enough.
Yeah, I think so, 100%. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing, and thank you so much for being a part of this.
It's a pleasure.
Just another massive thank you to Lauren for getting involved and being a part of what we're trying to do here. If you'd like to keep updated with what Lauren is doing in the world of psychology, I'll leave her LinkedIn details in the podcast description. And to our listeners, I want you to thank you for listening today, and I encourage you to look after yourselves during this difficult time. If the effect of COVID-19 is taking its toll on you and you find yourself struggling to cope, we encourage you to reach out to organizations such as SADAG, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. You can reach them on their toll-free number 0800 21 22 23. Stay safe, South Africa. We'll talk again soon.